And we're holding Ankh of Ches, Amud Beis, seven lines from the bottom. We said in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda, had said that, we talked about in the Mishnah, you have what's called Korev Nisrachik. You have somebody who was a relative and isn't anymore. For example, you have, for example, a person whose daughter is married to Pliny, so that their father-in-law and son-in-law, therefore either of them is possible leidos to the other. Now what happens if that daughter passes, or the wife of the son-in-law passes away, and now they're not relatives anymore. Now, the Mishnah had said that then it would be kosher, but Rabbi Yehuda had said that no, if the daughter passes away, but the son-in-law has children from her, then he's still considered connected to his father-in-law, and therefore they'd be possible leidos to one another. So what's the halacha? The Gemara says, Amr Tanchum, Amr Tavel, Amr Bruno, Amr Rav, halacha could be Yehuda. So the halacha is like him. So even in such a case, they were father-in-law and son-in-law. Now they're not anymore, but nevertheless, now there are still grandchildren. The father-in-law is still their Zeda. Then the halacha would be like Rabbi Yehuda, they're apostle for Edus to each other. On the other hand, Rava Amar Rav Nachman, ain't halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. Rava tells us in the name of Rav Nachman, the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda. They're not considered relatives anymore. V'chein Amar Rav Abachana Amar Rav Yechanan, ain't halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. So they would be able to give edus for one another in this case. Now, the Gemara says, Ika demasni l'lahoda Rav Abachana Ahal. There are those who said that Rav Abachana's statement was not in reference to our Mishnah, but rather in reference to something else. The Braisa says this, Zu Darash Rabbi Yosi Aglili. Rabbi Yosi Aglili darshan as follows. The Torah tells us, Uvaso ala koyim alavim, you should come when you have a din Torah, and in particular the Pesukim are talking about over there, when you have a case that you let the lower bata dinim don't know what the answer is, they're arguing about it and they haven't come to a conclusion. So the Pesuk says, Uvaso ala koyim alavim, you should come to the koyim alavim, who are members of the Sanhedrin Dola, ve'ala shofet ashiyah bayom mehem, and to the judge who is at that time, meaning in other words, you come to the Beis Din HaGadol, and they'll tell you the Psak Halacha. Now, Rabbi Yosi Aglili says, what do you mean? Ashayi Yeh Bayom Mehem. When else could he be? V'chital al-daitcha sh'odom ha'lechetz al-shofet sh'lohay b'yomav. Could a person conceivably go to a shofet who's not in his times? Why add the words Ashayi Yeh Bayom Mehem? Rather, Rabbi Yosi Aglili is saying that pasuk is talking about where the judge, where the shofet himself, was formerly a relative and now is not. So again, a similar kind of thing where, for example, where the judge, the member of the Sanhedrin, was married to somebody's daughter, and now that daughter passed away, now he's kosher to judge him. So therefore, the pasuk is saying, "Ashayir bayam rahim," meaning, in other words, if you had come with this din Torah a day or a month or a week or earlier, whatever it is, when the wife was still alive, then he would have been possible to judge you because he's your relative. But now that Ashayir bayam rahim, now in the time when the case comes to based in, he's no longer your relative, then he's able to judge you. And Amar Rav, so in that, Amar Rav Bachana, Amar Rav Yechanan, halacha could Rabbi Yosi Aglili, that the halacha would be like Rabbi Yosi Aglili, which means, in other words, that, in other words, Rabbi Yosi Aglili is saying the same thing as the Chachamim of our Mishnah, that it is kosher. Some say that Rav Abachana wasn't referring back to our Mishnah, but rather he was referring to this Braisa, but either way, it comes out the same thing, he's saying that it is kosher. So the Gemara gives a story in this connection. Bnei Chamur de Ma'ukva, the sons of Ma'ukva's father-in-law, so these are his wife's brothers, Krevim and Esrachak Uhavu, they were relatives who now became distant because the one that holds them together is Ma'ukva's wife, and she had passed away. Also, L'chamei dinner, so they came at one point to Ma'ukva for a din Torah. Amalahu tells them, Pastil Nolachol Adina, I'm possible to judge your case. Amrulay, they say to him, "My daitcha k'Rabbi Yehuda. What do you think? You're thinking to paskin like Rabbi Yehuda because at one point we were relatives, therefore we're still considered relatives, even though since then our sister, your wife, has passed away. We're not. The fact is, anan ma'isin and igur k'mi ma'arova. We can bring a letter from the west, meaning from Eretz Yisrael, from the Chacham of Eretz Yisrael, to ein halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda. That the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda. After all, we just said Rabbi Abachana says in the name of Rabbi Yechon, and either he says directly on our Mishnah or he says on the Braisa that the halacha is that k'rizim nesrachaku is kosher. So why won't you judge Rabbi Yehuda? So he tells them, also b'kav d'kira idbatna l'chu. Do you think that I'm stuck to you with a cav of wax? In other words, do you think that What do you think? I'm saying that I still am connected to you because of Rabbi Huda's opinion. No, I'm not. It's true. I'm not attached to you anymore. The reason, the only reason I'm saying that I'm possible to judge you, Elamashim Deloit Saitisu Dina, because I know you're not going to listen to what I have to say. Because having been brothers-in-law for a while, now you're very comfortable and familiar around me, and therefore I know that if now I sit as a dayan and tell you you have to do such and such, then you're just gonna shrug it off. So it's not because as a matter of technical halacha, I can't judge you, but because practically speaking, I know us having been brothers-in-law, then you're not going to respect so much what I say in the Din Torah, and that's why I'm passing you. So we see, in other words, that even though the halacha is strictly speaking not like Rabbi Yehuda, which kreivim nesrachaku or kosher, nevertheless you do have to do it. You do have to figure on a case by case basis. Is it going to be something like that where you know that they're not going to listen because of that prior relationship, and then in that case, then yeah, go find a different dayan, which would be more relevant as far as dayanim. It's less relevant as far as edim then, because after all, edim, you don't have to listen to them. They just have to see what's going on and testify and based it. Okay. Next, we said in the Mishnah, Oyhev Zeshu Shvino Yvachola, we said in the Mishnah that other people who are possible to give eders or to judge would be ha'oyhev v'hasoyne, the Mishnah said, a friend and an enemy. And we said an oyhev, a friend, doesn't just mean any old friend. It meant a shushvin. It meant one of those people that we learned about in Bava Basra who are part of your web of close friends, where when each of them gets married, the other ones are going to contribute towards the expenses of it, and they're going to be invited, etc. So they're really good friends. And then we said a soyne is where they didn't talk to one another for 3 days. So that was Rabbi Yehuda had said that, and then the Chachamim said to him, Jewish people are not suspect to go and testify falsely because they love or hate the guy. Rashi pointed out on the Mishnah when it comes to being dayanim, the Chachamim would agree that they can't. But when it comes to Eidos, the Chachamim are not going to say that Jews are not suspect of going so far as to testify falsely because of this. So Vakama, when we say Zeshu Shvinoi, how long does that psul last according to the Behoda? That is a Shushvin. Omer Rav Abba, Omer Rav Yumi, Omer Rav, Kol Shivas Yemei HaMishneh. It means throughout the 7 days of Sheva Brachas. V'rabbonan, Mishmei de Rava, Amri Afilu Miyom Rishen V'Elach, V'Chachamim say in the name of Rava, that even from the, even after the first day, he would be kosher, only on the day of the wedding itself would he be possible. The Yad Rama actually gives a different understanding of this line of the Gemara. He says he learns it. He breaks off after the word Verabbanan, and the question is Verabbanan. What about according to the Chachamim who disagree with Rabbi Yehuda? According to them, is the Shushvin ever possible? And the answer is that no. Afilu miyom rishon ve'elach, even from on the day of the wedding and afterwards, they would hold that he's kosher, and they would never say that a Shushvin is possible. Okay. Then we said Hasone Koshle Dibuchula. We said that an enemy is defined as somebody where they didn't talk to one another for 3 days because of hatred, because of anger. So the Gemara says Tana Rabbanan. The Pasuk says the context of the Pasuk is talking about when a person has killed somebody else for Shogeg and therefore he has to be sentenced to go to the Ore Mikloi. So the Pasuk says Vehulei Oyev Loi. So the half of the Pasuk that the Gemara is going to darshan over here is Vehulei Oyev Loi Vehulei Mevakesh Rasei. He wasn't an enemy to him, and he wasn't looking to do bad to him. So in other words, in context, the Pasuk is telling us that you're talking about Reuven killed Shimon, and he didn't hate him, he didn't mean to do anything to him, and there was an accident. So then he has to go off to the Ore Mikloi. But Rashi points out we have other psukim that are talking about the Ritzeach himself. Therefore, instead, we can understand that this pasuk is actually referring to the edim and to the dayanim. So the Pasuk then we can understand to be saying that he's not his enemy. Such a person can say Eidos about him. And when it says he's not looking to do bad to him, that would refer to the Yedinenu, then he would be able to judge him. meaning, in other words. So again, you have those other psukim that mention about the Ritzeach himself, so would mean that would refer back to the Edim who are saying that he's Chayav Golos. The Loy Mevakash Rasa, Rashi points out, the next words in the beginning of the next pasuk, the very next words after that in the Torah, V'shoftu Eda, that the Eda should judge and decide what the situation is. So therefore, the Loy Mevakash Rasa is meant as an introduction to V'shoftu Eda. Who should be the members of the Eda who are going to judge him would be people that Loy Mevakash Rasa. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda says, there we see, therefore, that an enemy should not be an aid or dayan about him. Okay, the Gemara says, now, again, the Chachamim disagree, because they say that, we don't suspect Jews of testifying falsely. So how the Chachamim will learn the Pesukim, we'll talk about in a minute. First of all, Ashduchan Soyne. Okay, well, that shows that would apply to an enemy. Oyev Menolon. How do we know that a friend, that a close friend, like Rabbi Yehuda had said, a Shushvin, is also possible? And the answer is Krivei Hochi, because you can also learn the pasuk as follows. When he's not an enemy to him, but you can also interject the words v'loy oyev loy, but he's not a close friend of his either, ye'idenu, then he can say edus for him, v'loy mevakish rasoi, he's not looking to do bad to the person, but we can interject also v'loy tevasoi, he's also not looking specifically to do good for him, ye'idenu, then he's the one who can judge him, which would imply, therefore, that neither an enemy nor a friend can do that. That's immediate. The fact is, the pasuk doesn't say oyev or anything like that. Or how can you interject those words when the pasuk doesn't actually have them? Rather, elas svarahu. Okay, so Rabbi Yehuda is going to get it from a svara. Oyev, my time of Hashem demerach gadaite. Why, after all, would an oyev, an enemy, be possible to give edus or to judge, according to the way Rabbi Yehuda understands the pasuk, would be Mishum de Merach Kadaite, because his das is far away, meaning, in other words, because he doesn't like the guy, therefore there's a concern that he might judge him falsely, or he might testify against him falsely. Oyev namim, Makar Vadaite, well, then a friend also, his mind is close to him, and he might say something untrue in his benefit. Okay, so that's where Rabbi Yehuda gets it. So he does have the psukim that refer to an oyev as not testifying or judging him, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying, based on a svara, we can also extend that to where he's his friend. What are the Chachamim darshining in that pasuk? And the answer is chad the dayan. Fine, one of them goes on the dayan. They do agree that the dayan can't be someone who hates the baldin, because then there's a concern. The dayan, after all, has a job, and part of his job is to try to find every possible way to exonerate him. And if he doesn't like him, then he's already biased, and he's not going to do that. So one of them refers to that. Idach, as far as the other part of the pasuk, that would be Kedetanya. They say we can learn from that what it says in the following Braisa. Omer Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, v'huloi oyev loy v'loi mevakash rasoi, this same pasuk that says he's not an enemy, his enemy, and he's not looking to do bad to him, mikan l'shnei tamar chachamim shesonin zeh zeh, from here we learn that if you have two tamar chachamim who hate each other, she'en yosh medin ke'echad, they should not sit on the same basin. Because basically what's going to happen is, the one of them is going to say a svara, and the other one, for no other reason than because he doesn't like the other one, is going to try to slog up that svara. So in other words, then you're not going to get a fair din, because like this, if they were basically indifferent to one another, if they didn't particularly like or hate each other, then they would be able to, Reuven, the first dayan, is saying something, Reb Shimon, the second dayan, well, you know, that's a good point, let's consider that. As opposed to if Reuven and Reb Shimon don't like each other for whatever reason, then Reuven is going to say something and Reb Shimon is Davka Aftalochas going to try to slog that up, even though Reb Reuven's Svara may be completely correct. They shouldn't do that, in other words. So Ein Yoshim Redin Ke'echad. In fact, the Bach says that if they're at least b'dieved. Now we're saying they shouldn't sit in judgment together, implying that if b'dieved, if they did, it would be fine. The Bach actually brings that if they're sonim gmurim, if they're real haters of one another, then it wouldn't be a valid din even b'dieved. So in other words, we have to evaluate ahead of time what what the relationship is between these between these two potential dayanim. Now, of course, I mean, if we're talking about a Beis Din in town, then Bepashtus, that's already been worked out when they first sat on the Beis Din. But in other words, like this, we talked, for example, at the beginning of the parak about a Zabla Beis Din, Zebur Le'echad, where each of the Bale Din picks for themselves a dayan, and then two of them jointly pick the third one, whether the two Bale Dinim jointly according to the mayor, or the two dayanim themselves according to the Chachamim, as we learned at the beginning of the parak. Either way, we would have to make sure that they're not shonim gmurim, that they're not really hating one another, because if so, then it's not going to be a valid din Torah, says the Bach. Mishnah says, "Ketzed boit kinesa edim." How do we examine? How do we cross examine the edim? Here in our Mishnah, we're going to be focusing on dinim mominus. In the next parak, because basically our parak is talking about dinim mominus. In the next parak, we're going to talk about the same thing as far as dinim nefoshes, how we cross examine them. They bring everybody into a room, into the Beis Din Shtibel. The first thing is we try to frighten the Edim into telling the truth. We'll see in the Gemara what kind of things we tell them to make them realize, if they're going to testify falsely, how severe the consequences are going to be. So that's the first thing we do. And we see in a scholar Adam Lachotz, then we send everybody else outside of the Beis Din Shtibel, or Mashiron as a Gadol Shebehen, and we keep the elder of the two Edim. Meaning, in other words, we don't want the two Edim to be there, because then obviously one of them is going to learn from the other what to say and what not to say. So we have to cross examine the Edim one at a time. But Pashtus, the Bale Din are still there in the Beis Din as well. We don't mean we send out everybody. The Bale Din may well still be there as well, but we mean the rest of the audience and the other aid are sent out. And we tell him, Emor, so tell us, let's say it's a case of Dinim Mominus that you're telling us that Reuven owes Shimon money. Well, how do you know, what's your basis for saying that Reuven owes that money to Shimon? Now, for example, Imamo, who Amali Shani Chayevloi, if, for example, they say, well, Reuven himself told us that he owes the money to Shimon. No good. That doesn't count, as we're going to see in the Gemara. Or, for example, if the aid might say, Ish Pliny Amali Shu Chayevloi, that a third party, that Pliny, that Levi, told me that Reuven is Chayev money to Shimon. Loya Maklum, neither one works. The first one, as we'll see in the Gemara, even though they're saying that Reuven himself said it, it's only valid only if he said it in a way that the Gemara is going to call Odissa, which is an official admission that can be taken to Beis Din, not Sam that he says it, as we'll see in the Gemara, we'll work out the details. And the second one is hearsay, and hearsay evidence is possible in Beis Din. Before I should point out, by the way, the expression Ish Pliny is interesting. Ish, a lot of times, means a very important person. Like you have, for example, in Pirkei Avos, Ish Yerushalayim, Ish Sereda, etc. Doesn't just mean a person from Yerushalayim or from Tzedah, means a very important person from there. So here they're saying Ish Pliny, a very important person, told me. Nevertheless, that's still not valid Avis. Ad Shiyomar b'fornenu hoydoloi shu chayiv le'masayim zuz. When would it be valid? Is if they're saying, for example, that Reuven told us in the presence of Edim, meaning I'm one of the Edim, and then the other Ed who came with me is the other one, that he admitted in front of us that he owes 200 zuz. As we'll see in the Gemara, the details about that. So when he says it in front of Edim, that's a valid Udissa, that's a valid Hoidah, and then therefore that can be dealt with in Beis Din. Obviously you could also have that they say we saw the actual loan, etc., but the point is, in other words, it can't be that we just heard it by hearsay or an admission that doesn't amount to a valid Hoidah. Okay. Once we've interrogated him and found that his aider seems to check out, then they bring in the second aide and they go through the same process again. If it comes out that what they're saying matches up, at that point then the dayanim start discussing the matter. At that point, by the way, as we're going to learn in the Gemara tomorrow, everybody else is outside the Beis Din Shtibel. Once they've heard the Eders, we don't want anybody to be present while they're deliberating, because in particular, we don't want the Bale Din later on to know that inevitably during the discussion, you're going to have some of the Dayanim are going to be saying, you know, it seems more likely that Reuven is right, and others are going to be saying it seems more likely that Shimon is right. We don't want the Bale Din to know who was actually arguing in which direction. We just want them to know the Psach Din, the bottom line Psach Din. Gomeros Adover, so once they finish the matter, I skipped a line. Shnaim Omer Zakev Echad Omer Chayev, if let's say it's a base din of three, as we learned at the beginning of the Masech, that for din in Momenus, that's all you need. So if two of them are saying that he's innocent, he doesn't have to pay, and one says he's guilty, he has to pay, Zakai, then we go according to the Roiv, and he's exonerated, and he doesn't pay. If two say he's guilty, he's liable to pay, and one says he's innocent, then he's chayev, again, majority. What about if one says chayev, the other says zakai, and the third one doesn't know? It says, I don't know what to say. Or even if you have two of them say one way, and the third one says, I don't know. So you might think to yourself, well, what's the difference? Even if he said his opinion, one way or the other, either we're going to have two dayonim saying chayev, or we're going to have three dayonim, what's the difference? Either way, we're going to have a majority. And unlike by din and afoshes, where you have to have super majorities, or things like, where you can't have that all of them, to begin with, judge him guilty by din in Momenus, it doesn't work that way. So on the face of it, you would say, so what's the problem? You have one dayan who says you don't know, then you judge that you have the case decided by the two who say we do know. No, that doesn't work. Yosifu adayanim, we have to add two more dayanim, because otherwise, in effect, that one who says I don't know is considered as though he wasn't there. So now it would come out, you have only two for the din Torah, and two is not enough, you're supposed to have three. As we learned at the beginning of the Masechta, in principle, maybe at least according to Shmuel, two could judge a din Torah, but it's called a based din chotzuf, it's called a chutzvedik based din, so it's not the right way of doing things, it's supposed to be that a based din should consist of three. And right now, we don't have three, because the one who says any idea, we consider as though he wasn't present. So therefore we need to add extra dinim, therefore we need to add extra dayonim, and then they'll rediscuss it among themselves, and eventually they'll come up with a verdict. This is, by the way, we learned in the first parak, this is how it's possible to have, we said by dinim nefoshes, you're able to have a majority of two. And we said, how could that be? It's either going to be a majority of one or of three. It's always going to be an odd number, because you start out with an odd number of dayanim. The Gemara had explained there that when it comes to adding dayanim, you don't necessarily do that. That you do add them two at a time. But again, because you have one says any idea, then therefore you can end up with an even numbered majority. Again, that's relevant as far as dinin afoshes. For dinin mominus, it doesn't really matter. A majority of one is considered enough. Okay. Gomru asadava, once they finish the matter, once they've come to a decision, hoyimachnisin oisen, and they bring back in the Balei Din. Now, the Mishnah has not said anything about them sending the Balei Din out. So we'll see about that. We'll see about that in the Gemara. But anyway, so now they bring them in. So now the greatest, the most senior of the Dayanim says, you plenty of Zaka, you plenty of Chayev. Now, how do we know that even after the Dayan has left the Beis Din Shivul, Lo Yoimar, he should not say to the Balei Din, Ani Mezaka, he shouldn't go over to the person who lost, let's say, and say, you know what, I would have been, I was on your side, I was defending you, V'chaveirei Mechayvin, and my colleagues are the ones who declared you Chayev, Avo Ma Esa Shechaveirei Rabu Alai, what could I do, I was outvoted, how do we know he shouldn't do that? Al Zenema, V'loiseilach Rochoba Mech, on this, the pasuk says, don't go as a talebearer, as a baal lashon hara among your people. Meaning, in other words, if he's going to do that, it's going to be like he's spreading lashon hara, he's spreading tales, that's basically what rechilos is. Rechilos is where you go over to Reuven and say, do you know what Shimon said about you? And then that's going to cause friction between Reuben and Shimon. So here, the same way, the Dayan would say, you know what, do you know what Reb Shimon said about you in the Din Torah? So therefore, you can't do that. For Omer, and you have another pasuk from Mishlei, Holach Rochel Megalasoid. What's the definition of a Rochel? Is somebody who goes and reveals secrets. So he has no business revealing the secrets of the Beis Din, because the whole point was, we had everybody out there while they're deliberating on the matter. So you have no business. You have no business revealing that secret. Now the pasuk over here in the pasuk that's quoted over here in the Mishnah, Lo Yiseilach Rochel Ba'amecha, is in parenthesis, and in fact there are girsis that don't have it, because what would be the necessity? Why we're going to have a brisa in the Gemara that's going to quote both psukim, but if the Mishnah already had both psukim, first of all the Gemara wouldn't need to quote the brisa, and second of all, anyway, I mean, if we already have a pasuk from the Torah, we certainly don't need a pasuk from ksuvim to tell us the same thing. Torah outranks ksuvim. However, the Tosfos Yom Tov on the Mishnah points out that
listen, maybe we do need both psukim. You could say, Loiseilech Rochel means don't start arguments like this by going and telling Reuven what Shimon said about him. Here, you might think, though, that after all, Reb Reuven, the first Dayan, is going to say to himself, you know what, if I don't tell this guy, he's going to think that I was one of the ones who voted against him, and he's not going to like me. Maybe, therefore, I should tell him that I, in fact, was on his side. Nevertheless, we need to say the second pasuk, Hoilech Rochel Megalasod, that no, that is also a form of Rechilos, and you're not allowed to do that. Okay. We'll see in the Gemara, though, that sometimes you can have, there is a case where the Baal Din is able to say, Mehechan Dantuni, tell me on what basis you judged, and then we're saying they do write him out of Psak Halacha, but even then, not necessarily do the Dayanim identify themselves which one said what during the deliberations, for the same reason. Okay. Now, the Mishnah had started out by saying that we ma'ayman aleihem, that we try to scare the Edim into telling the truth, or into withdrawing if they know that what they're going to say is a lie. So, heichi amin lahu, what do we tell them? What does the iyum consist of? Amar Rav Yehuda, hochi amin lahu. So, Rav Yehuda says, we tell them a pasuk like the following. Nisim beruach v'geshem oyin. There's clouds, there's wind, but there's no rain. In other words, you see when the weather makes it look like it's about to rain, but it doesn't rain. Ich mishala b'matas shoker, then that's the like a person who praises himself on giving a false gift. So elsewhere, for example, the Gemara mentions that it means, the Gemara darshins, it means, for example, people who pledge to give tzedakah and they don't give it, so then the result of that is that Hashem acts kind of midah keneged midah, and Hashem makes it look like it's going to rain, and then it doesn't, and the people are disappointed and there's a drought. Here, when we're talking to the Edim, we use it in a similar sense. We say, ish mishalol b'matas shoker refers to a person who's going to say false eders. He's going to pride himself that he's going to give, that he's going to cause actually the Yad Ramah explains why they're telling him, why would you, if you're testifying falsely, why would you do that? Mistama, because they're offering you money to testify falsely. So that payment is called Matas Shoker, is a gift in order to make you say a lie. So then we tell them the result of that, you're going to cause a drought. There's going to be terrible suffering in the world with a drought because you're accepting money to testify falsely. Marshall says a different vote on it. Marshall says, imagine, for example, let's say, for example, this aide Yankel, where again, we don't know that he's testifying falsely, but we have to consider the possibility that he is. Maybe let's say this Yankel owes Shimon money from previously. Now he's stingy and he doesn't want to pay Shimon, or he probably can't afford it. So he thinks to himself, you know what? I have an idea. I'm going to go testify falsely that Reuven owes Shimon money, and then the result is the money will be taken from Reuven and given to Shimon, so Shimon will get what's supposed to be coming to him, and I won't have to pay it. So therefore we tell him, no, that's matas shoker, that's giving a gift falsely, that's giving a gift at somebody else's expense. You can't do that, and you should realize that if you do that, it's going to cause a drought in the world. Omalei Rava, but Rava says that's not going to scare him necessarily. He's going to rationalize to himself. Yachlu lemeimer, the Edim, even if they are going to testify falsely, they might rationalize to themselves and say, you know what? Like people say, Shev Shni have a kafna, there was 7 years of famine, but above a umnalei cholif, And yet it never passed by the door of the craftsman, meaning, in other words, that you have certain people. A person thinks to himself, there are certain people, even when there's a drought, even when there's a famine, there are certain people who are rich enough and they have enough of a constant flow of business that they're not really affected by it. So the Edom are going to say to themselves, okay, so there'll be a drought in the world, big deal. I'm pretty much immune to it. So that's not going to scare them off of testifying falsely. Marshav brings in connection, and this connection, by the way, is an interesting point, that when Pare first meets Yosef's brothers, when Yosef brings several of his brothers to meet Pare, and Pare's first question to them is, Mama Seichem, what do you do for a living? That seems like a bit of an odd way to start the conversation. So Marshav says it's based on this Gemara over here, that listen, if you're Bali Umanius, if you have a trade and a craft of your own, then why are you coming here in the first place? Even during a famine, you could still manage to make Pare. And they answer him that we're pasturing sheep, and the fact is there's no grass for our sheep in Eretz Canaan, and that's why we came here. So in other words, we're sort of telling him basically, yes, we are Bali Umnius, but our Umnus does depend on the rain and does depend on the crops. Ela Omar Rava. So Rava says, fine. So never mind what Rabbi Huda said. Let's try a different thing. Amrin Lahu. We quote them the following pasuk. Mefitz v'cherev v'chetz shonun. a sledgehammer and a sword and a sharpened arrow. Ish onibre eu, a shocker is a person who testifies falsely against somebody else. Meaning, in other words, we tell him now the sledgehammer and the sword and the arrow over here, we're referring to the tools of the Malach HaMavos. So in other words, we tell them that your false aders is going to cause an epidemic here. It's going to cause the Malach HaMavos is going to come and run riot, Rahman al-Islam. However, Omalei Ravashi, but Ravashi says really that's not going to scare them off either. Yachlu the Meimar, they can then rationalize to themselves and say, again, as an expression goes, Shev Shni, have a Moisana. For seven years there was an epidemic. The Inish boy Shnei Lo Shiv, and yet nobody passed away, not in their time. In other words, they were going to say to themselves, listen, the Eivishta decides how long a person is going to live. Yes, there's an epidemic, but still it doesn't mean that people are going to die prematurely because of it. Ultimately, Hashem decides in advance how long each person is going to live. So the fact that we're trying to frighten them with the threat of an epidemic is not necessarily going to scare them off. By the way, the Aruch HaNer points out they're not correct in saying that. The fact is, there's a Gemara in Chagiga that says yesh nispa b'loy nishpat. Sometimes there are people who pass away without judgment, meaning in other words, it wasn't predestined that they should die at this point. The Gemara talks about over there about how the Malach HaMavos can make mistakes, which is a little odd in itself, and the Malach HaMavos is a shliach v'evishter, but whatever. The point is, in other words, they're not right in saying that, but nevertheless they may rationalize it to themselves, and therefore it's not going to scare them off testifying falsely. Rather, Ravashi says, never mind threatening them with consequences that are going to affect everybody else. Make them realize that this affects them themselves. Omali Nosin Bamazutra said to me, to Ravashi, Amrinam Lahu, what we tell them is, Sadi Shakri, lying Edim, A'ugraihu, where they're doing it, even to the ones who hired them, Zili, are considered degraded. In other words, what happens? We're telling them, like, you might be false Edim. Why might you come be and B, why might you come as false Edim? Because one of the Baal Adinim is paying you off. You should know, even that person who pays you off thinks to himself that really what horrible, degraded people they are, that they're willing to accept money to testify falsely. So in other words, Pashut, we appeal to their own sense of self-worth, their own sense of self-pride that people don't usually want other people to look down on them. So we tell them, you should know, if you're testifying falsely, then even those people who hired you are going to look down on you. Dichtiv, as we find the Pasuk, you have the whole story with Novos being accused falsely so that Achav can kill him, can have him killed and take his vineyard. So the expression in the Pasuk is that the instructions that are being given to the Dayanim, to the corrupt Dayanim in the city of Yisrael is, V'hashivu shnayim anashim b'nei b'liyal negdoi. You should have two people, b'nei b'liyal, sit opposite him. B'nei b'liyal means people b'li oil, without a yoke of Torah and mitzvahs, people who think the world is hefker. V'iduhu lemer, and they will testify against him, saying, Berachta, the king of Melech, that you cursed Hashem and the king, and then they'll have him executed. So we see that even in the instructions, you're calling them Bnei Bliyal. You're saying that even you, corrupt Dayanim as you are, are going to realize that such people who would do such a thing, testify falsely, are Bnei Bliyal. So therefore, we say the same kind of thing to the Edom over here. Realize that if you are actually doing this, you're taking money to testify falsely, that even the people who are hiring you for that are going to think of you as Bnei Bliyal, as worthless people. Okay. Now, the Mishnah said, "Im omo hu omo lichula," that we said, if the aide says that the reason I'm saying that Reuben owes Shimon is because Reuben told me he owes the 200, or he says because somebody else told me that he owes him, then no good. But ad sheyomru, when is it a valid aidus? Ad sheyomru, if the aidim say, "Befanenu hoydeloi shu chayv lemasayim zuz," he was murdered in our presence that he's chayv 200 zuz. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about that din. The expression "befanenu" suggests that he knew that we were present. So Messiah le Rabbi Yehuda, that supports what Rabbi Yehuda says. The Omer of Yehuda Amarav, Sorach Shiyoma Atem Edai. In order for them to be valid edim, the loiver, the one who's owing the money, would have to say Atem Edai. You would have to specifically say, "You are my edim," and then that way that makes it a valid hodah. That and now later on, he can't change his mind and say he was joking or something like that. The Rambam actually holds that that would only be only if he's saying if he's saying derech haydah in the first place. If he's actually saying, you know, it's true, I am admitting that I owe him 200 zuz, then you wouldn't need to say atam edai. Only if he's saying it in a course of conversation would he need to say. The Rosh disagrees with that. In any case, the point is that we see the expression before Nenu suggests that he specifically designated us as Edim and knew that we were present. Itmar Nami, we said also, Amar Rav Chiya Ba'aba, Amar Rav Yechanan, if Shimon says to Reuven, Mona li v'yadcha, listen, you owe me a mona, what's the story with it? V'amalei hein, and Reuven says, yes, v'macha amalei tnehuli, so the next day Shimon comes and says, no, you told me you owe me the 200, so give it, or the 100, so give it to me. Amar mashatani b'cha, and Reuven says, you know what, I was only joking, I was only saying it in a way of joking, listen, you know, you're gonna joke on me, and you're gonna make up a debt that I don't owe you, then I'm gonna answer back with a joke and say, sure, I owe it to you, but I wasn't actually meaning to be murder. So Rav Chiya Ba'aba says Potter, then he would be Potter. Same reason, because he didn't say Atam Edai. So we see, in other words, that he does have to say Atam Edai. This is in parenthesis, and actually the Rif has a girsa more specifically that he has to say Atam Edai. But it amounts to the same thing. Tanya Nami Hochi, we learn similarly in a Braisa, Mona li biyodcha, Shimon says to Reuven, you owe me a mona, Omale hein, and Reuven says, sure, Lamacha Omale tsnehuli, and the next day Shimon says to give it to me, Omale meshatani b'cha, and he says, I was only joking, Potter, then he is Potter because he didn't say it in a way where he definitively said, Atam Edai, that you are my Edim. Not only that, even if Shimon has Edim hide behind a fence to overhear what's going on, and at that point Shimon says to Reuven, you owe me a mona, and Reuven says, yes, sure, I do, and Shimon says, are you willing to say that admission in front of Ploni and Ploni Edim? Now let's say Reuven says no, because I'm afraid that if I say it in front of Edim, then you are going to force me to come to Beis Din. And it might even be they're going to force me to pay right away, and I can't afford it. The next day, Shimon says, so give it to me. And Reuven says, all of that is, I was joking. Potter, then he's Potter. In this case, there were Edim, and then they were hiding behind a fence. Doesn't work because he didn't say Atam Edai. And the Braisa finishes off. So that's what we're saying in the Mishnah. When we say Befanenu Hodoloi, it has to be in our presence, meaning he knew full well that there were Edim there when he said, I owe you the 100 or the 200, and then he's accepting that they are the Edim. So again, according to the Rambam, he doesn't always have to say Atam Edai. It would depend. Well, it depends how he's saying it, whether he's saying it derech haydah or just in conversation. But the point, according to the Rosh, disagrees with that. But the point is, he has to know that the Edim are there. In other words, the Aruch HaNer points out if it weren't for that, the Mishnah would have used the expression Shamainu Shaploini Hoida. We heard Ploini being murdered that he owes the money. So the fact that it says Befanenu means he has to actually know that we were present, not that we were behind the fence. Now the Braisa continues, the internal Amesis, we do not argue on behalf of Amesis to try to find any Amesis, somebody who's trying to convince somebody else to worship Avodah Zarah. Beistin doesn't try to advance any arguments in his favor. If he himself points out an argument in his own favor, then of course we have to listen to it, but Beistin doesn't, unlike with other Dinei Nefashos, where Beistin themselves is obligated to come up with everything, with all arguments possible to exonerate him, by Amesis we don't do that. This is Mesis, Mandachar Shmei. Where did a Mesis come in? We didn't say anything about a Mesis until now. And the answer is Chsuri Mechsura. The Braisa is missing words of a Hachi Katoni. It means like this. Now, Im Loitan. So now, we're saying like this. Again, we have the scenario where Reuven has said to Shimon, yes, I owe you 100, but we're saying that it's no good because he can say Meshata Yisibacha. Now, Im Loitan, what if Reuven does not come up with that argument of Meshata Anibach? Let's say, for example, he just says that, you know what, I don't want to pay you. Let's say, for example, fine, bring your aid in. So then that wouldn't work. Ain't toinen loy, then Beis Din is not going to advance that argument on his behalf. So if Reuven, if Reuven knows to say Meshata Yisi Bechor, then fine. Then we say that, okay, then Shimon, you don't have a case. But if Reuven says, I don't know, you're telling me I owe you 100, fine. Maybe I do, maybe I don't. Bring your Edim. Then it would be valid for Shimon to bring out his Edim, who were hiding behind the fence, and say, here, they can testify that they heard you saying this. And Beis Din is not going to say, on behalf of Reuven, you know what, maybe is it possible to shatter Yisi Bechor. Over Dinin of Foshis. Now, when it comes to Dinin of Foshis, Afa Gabdalei Tarn, even if the defendant is not arguing anything in his favor that they could argue, that he could have, Toyin and Lloyd, nevertheless, Beis Din is required to come up with to come up with arguments on his behalf. So whatever kind of arguments that could be brought, he himself may not think of them, but Beis Din is obligated to bring up any possible argument on his behalf. However, the ain't turning of a mesis, however, when it comes to a mesis, it's not like that. A mesis, of course, is going to be chayav misa. Nevertheless, for that purpose, we treat a mesis like dinim mominus. Any argument that he himself brings up in his defense, then fine, we have to listen to it and evaluate it. But any argument that he didn't bring up, we Beis Din are not going to bring up on his behalf. That's what the Braita means. Maishna, Mesis. So the question is, why is a Mesis different than any other case of Dinin Nefoshes? And the answer is, Omer Rav Chama bar Chanina, mi pirkei de Rav Chiya ba'aba Shmi'eli. I heard the following in a shir from Rav Chiya ba'aba. Pirkei is actually a public shir that would be given to the general public. So Rav Chiya ba'aba explained the following in a shir, not just in other words in a shir to his Talmidim in the yeshiva, but in a shir to the Velt. Shiny Mesis. The reason is a Mesis is different. Rachmana Oma Lois Sachmel, because the Pasuk says, Lois Sachmel, do not have Rachmanas on him, Lois Sachasta Olav, and don't cover up for him. Meaning, the Lois Sachmel teaches us, like this, you usually have to have Chemla, you have to have Rachmanas on a person who's being judged for Dinin Nefoshes, and try to bring up every possible argument to exonerate him. But here, where the Pasuk says, by a Mesis, Lois Sachmel, then you don't do that. And the Gemara brings, here's another source for this point, that ain't turning on basis. Omer of Shmuel bar Nachman, Omer of Denison, minayin she ain't turning on basis. How do we know that we don't argue on behalf? How do we know that we don't argue on behalf of a basis? We can learn that from the story of the Nachash HaKadmoni. Here the Eibishter is telling Adam, what were you doing? How could you eat from the Eitadas? And then Adam puts the blame on Chava, and Chava then goes and puts the blame on the Nachash, and then the Eibishter just says to the Nachash, because you did this, then therefore here is your punishment. Hashem doesn't take time to listen to any arguments that the Nachash HaKadmoni could have made. The Nachash, after all, could have argued several arguments in his own favor, but he didn't argue them. So why doesn't the Eibishter bring up those potential arguments? Because the snake himself did not bring it up. So we see that he was trying to get them to do an Aveda. So how much more so we see when it comes to Avodah Zarah this was also a form of Avodah Zarah, because he's telling them that if you eat from the Eitz Hadas, then you'll be like Hashem and you'll be able to create worlds, etc. So it's a form of Avodah Zarah. But in any case, the point is we see that he didn't make these arguments on his own behalf, and Hashem didn't make them on his behalf because he's considered a Mesis. The Tosfos Shams points out that, we still need both psukim. If you only have the pasuk lo sachmel, you would say that fine, you don't want to patter him completely. He was mesis after all, but maybe we should still try to bring up arguments in his favor. And the Nachash HaKadmoni was saying that we don't see anything, there's no tainus at all. Maybe a Nachash is different than a person. So therefore we actually need both psukim. So what do we mean that he could have had several arguments? My Havel Elamemar, what would the snake have argued in his own favor, which was saying that Hashem didn't do that because he himself didn't? The answer is he could have argued, Divrei Rav, Divrei Tama, Divrei Mishoimin, Divrei Mishoimin, Divrei Rav Shoimin. He could have said, listen, if Hashem, the master, says such a thing, and the Talmud, Adam, is telling you something different, who do you listen to? Of course, you listen to the master. So in other words, I'm telling him to eat from the Eitz Hadas, but Hashem, he knew that. Hashem said not to. He should have listened to Hashem. The fact that he listened to me is not my problem. Now, Tosfos points out that in that case, couldn't any Macy's get away with that argument? Tosfos says no, because the Nachash was never actually commanded, don't try to convince Adam and Chava not to eat from the Eitz Hadas. A regular Macy's is commanded in the Torah not to try to seduce somebody else into Avodah Zarah. So he doesn't have that excuse. But because you could say to him himself, listen, Divrei Rabbah, Divrei Talmud, Divrei Mishrei, and Hashem told you not to be a Macy's, what are you doing? But here the Nachash himself was never commanded by Hashem, don't be a Macy's, therefore he could have maybe gotten away with that argument. Now Maushar points out that's one argument. We said that Harbe Kainis, he could have had other arguments. So Maushar says, you know, there's another point as well, the next point that the Gemara is gonna say, Kola Mosif Gurea, that when you're adding, you're actually subtracting, that could have been another argument that the Nachash used in his defense, that Chava added to the original mitzvah, and therefore that's why she was susceptible. But therefore that's at least two arguments that he could have made in his own favor. So the Gemara continues, Amar Chizkiya, minayin shekol ha-mosif gereya, how do we know that if you add inappropriately, then you're actually taking away? Shenema, from that same story, Amar Elokim, here Chava explained to the Nachash that Hashem said about the tree, about the Eitz Hadas, you should not eat from it and you should not touch it. Now Hashem never said anything about touching it. What happened, as Rashi says on the Pasuk, and he brings over here, the Nachash then pushed Chava to touch the tree, and he said, look, you didn't die from that, so if you didn't die from that, then you're not going to die from eating it either, and that led to everything from there. Whereas if she hadn't mentioned that point about not touching it, then the Nachash wouldn't have had that basis to convince her to eat from it. There's Midrashim that imply that Adam is the one who told her that extra thing and she didn't realize that it wasn't directly from the Eivishter, in which case the fault is more on Adam. An interesting point, by the way, is that we always say you're supposed to make a siyag latorah. You're supposed to make a fence. So wasn't Adam correct, or Chava, as the case may be, correct in saying don't touch it as a siyag so as not to eat from it? So that's true, but first of all, you have to make sure that the siyag doesn't cause you to violate the mitzvah as it did in this case. But second of all, this is before they even had a Yetzihara. After all, the Yetzihara here is an external thing, the Nachash. It's not internal to them yet, so therefore there's not necessarily business making a siyag around what the Eivishter is saying. Or if you're going to, then at least it should have been that he should have made it clear. This part is the Isser from Hashem, and this part is the part that we should add for ourselves as a siyag. Remeshaushi Amar Mehochar. Remeshaushi says, I have a different pasuk where we also see this point of Kol HaMosif Gereya. The pasuk says about the size of the Oren, Amosayim V'chetzi Orkoi. The length of the Oren is 2.5 Amos. Now, the word Amosayim is with an Aleph at the beginning. If you were to take off that Aleph, you'd have the word Mosayim, which means 200. Then you would say that the Oren has to be 200 Amos and half an Amma long. By adding the letter Aleph, you're taking away and making it 2 Amos instead of 200. So that's another example of Kol HaMosif Gereya. Different explanation that's brought from the Vilna Gaon. It's also printed as a footnote under Marsha. So first of all, Maharsha says, I mean, it's a little hard to say that, but we're saying in effect that the pasuk, if it didn't have the letter Aleph in it, then the word Mosayim would be spelt Mem Sof Yud Mem. But that's not how it's spelt. In Tanakh, the word Mosayim is always spelt with an Aleph after the Mem. So rather, Maharsha says, fine, we're not talking about the text of the Torah, we just mean when people are speaking. If a person were to speak and say Amosayim versus Mosayim, then it would make a difference. By saying Mosayim, where after all, in pronunciation, it's exactly the same, then it would mean 200. When he adds the Aleph at the beginning, then he reduces it down to 2. A footnote to Maharsha, which is a vort that's brought in the name of the Vilna Gaon, says another point as well. The Mosif is the Vav on the word Vochetzi. If it said Amosayim Chetzi Orkoi, then you would understand it to mean Amosayim, 2 Amos, Chetzi Orkoi is half the length of the Oren, meaning the length of the Oren would be 4 Amos. By putting the Vav, instead it makes it 2.5. So that's another way of looking at it, how it is that adding that extra letter is Gereya, is reducing. Rav Masharshi says you have a third example. Another example. Ashtei Esrei Yirias, the Pasuk mentions about the curtains of the Mishkan, where the ones that were made out of goat's hair, there were 11 of them, and the expression is Ashtei Esrei. Now, without the ayin, it would be Shtei Esrei, which would be 12. By adding the ayin and making it Ashtei Esrei, you're reducing and bringing it down to 11. So it's another example of Kol HaMosif Gereya.
getting back to this matter of Udissa, this case, these cases where a person admits in front of Edim that he owes money. So far, what we've said is if he admits it not in front of Edim, then it's no good, and he can say, Meshata Yisibacha, I was only joking. He can say, basically, listen, you're coming up with a ridiculous claim against me. I'm going to answer as if I admit to that ridiculous claim, but it's not actually so, unless he knows that the Edim were there. We said we can't have the Edim hide behind the fence or something. Now, all of this would only apply only if Reuven is actually saying Meshata Ani Bacha, that I'm joking. But if he says that it never happened, I never admitted, then even though he doesn't know that the Edim were there, nevertheless, that would make him a chazaka of a kafran, that he's a denier, that he's a liar, because after all, the Edim can say, you did say it. Fine, we don't know whether you were saying it sincerely, or mashata, or yisibacha, but at least we can say that you did say it, and therefore he's going to now claim and say, I never said it, then it would show that he's a liar. However, Omer a Papa Breder of Achava Ada, no, not necessarily. Hochi Amin and Mishmeder Rava. Omalei, it says on the side over here, it's supposed to say, Rav Papa Breder of Achava Ada says, no, Hochi Amin and Mishmeder Rava, we say in the name of Rava, Kol Mili Dichdi Lo Dichiri Inchi. Whenever you have something empty, something useless, then people don't necessarily remember it. So in other words, this statement over here, a statement over here where he's saying that I owe you, where it wasn't knowingly in the presence of Edom, and where he has the ability to say Meshata Yisibacha, then he's not necessarily expected to remember it. So therefore, now when it comes to Beis Din and the Edom say, well, you said that he said it. The fact that he says I never said it, like Rava is saying, does not necessarily brand him as a liar, because he'd have every right in Beis Din to say, you know what, I taka forgot, because after all, I knew when I said it to begin with, it doesn't mean anything, that it was just Meshata Ani Bacha, and therefore I didn't bother remembering. You're right, now you ate him, have jogged my memory that I did say it, but nevertheless that doesn't mean that when I said before that I didn't say it, that necessarily I was lying. So in short, in other words, according to Abaya, he would be considered a liar, and according to Rava, he would not. So now, the Yad Ramah does point out and say, listen, we did say before that if he doesn't claim Meshata Yisibacha, then Beis Din doesn't advance that claim on his behalf, so therefore that would be the same thing over here. If he says, L'Hoyot Vodim Olam, and the Edim say, wait a minute, you did say it, if he himself doesn't think to say Meshata Yisibacha, then the Yad Ramah points out that we, Beis Din, would not advance that claim on his behalf, and even Rava would agree that he's branded a liar. On the other hand, the Shach disagrees with that. Next, the Gemara tells, Hahu de Achman le Edim lechavre bekilse. There was a case where a person had Edim hide out in his canopy bed. So they're in his room. They're in his room. They have a canopy over there. They have a canopy bed. He's going to think that everybody over there is sleeping. And he says, Shimon says to Reuven, you owe me a mana. Omalei hein, and Reuven says yes. So he says, now he knows he's not going to want to admit in front of Edim, so he says, those who are awake and those who are asleep, are you willing that there'll be Edim on you? In other words, he's saying that Reuven is going to think everybody is sleeping, so he's going to say sure, because if they're asleep, they're not going to know what's going on anyway. But he figures this way, by saying that, he'll later on have a basis for saying, you know what, they actually weren't asleep, they actually were awake, and therefore you, Reuven, are chayev. Omalei loy, and Reuven says, no, that I'm not willing to do, that the awake and the asleep should be edim. Omalei kahana, for omalei loy. Listen, the fact is he said that no, he wasn't willing to have it done in front of edim. So therefore, so he would be able later on to claim that in fact it wasn't a valid hajah, and it was only meshato yisibacha. So in a similar vein, Hahu de Achman Edim Kivra Lachavre, there was a person who had Edim hide out for somebody else in a caver. Apparently the caver was not just a hole in the ground like we have them nowadays, it was more like an oil, more like a mausoleum or something, an above ground structure where people could hide out in.
Rabbi, if the Gemara before said that when you have to have, you have to say, hey, these are my Edim, these are the Edim in front of the Edim, he says, only right. Then it works. So why would we think that if the guys are sleeping or if the guys are hiding in a caver, that might work? Before we said it has to be a certain way, and now we're going less.
That's true, actually. So there's actually an argument about the Bach, between the Bach and the Shach, about that point. According to the Bach, it's true. There's not really so much a chiddush in this story, but rather the point is, the Gemara is going to say further on that if Shosak, if he was quiet, then it would be valid. In other words, because in this case, where Shimon is saying that the awake and the asleep should be Edim, if Reuven had said nothing in response to that, then yes, it would be considered valid Edus, even though he didn't say Atam Edai. So only the Gemara is bringing this point, only to be Medayek that point further on. That's according to the Bach. The Shach says actually that no, the point is that Davka, when he says no, that when he says no, then he doesn't even need later on to say Meshata or Yisibacha, just the fact that he's saying that no, I'm not willing, these guys should be my Edim, even though you're claiming that they're asleep, is enough even without him saying Meshata or Yisibacha. So according to that, then there is a Chiddush in that story. Very good point, thank you. So the Gemara tells, Ahud Achman Edim Kivra Lachabre, a person had Edim hide out in a grave for somebody else. Omale Monali Biyabcha, he says, you owe me a mana. Omale, and Reuven says, Hein. So he says, Chayu Mesi Leva Alochsadi, are you willing that the living and the dead should be Edim on you? Omale Loi, and he says, no. Omale Rav Shimon, Omale Loi. So similarly, Rav Shimon says that, listen, after all, he said, Rav Shimon, it says on the side of it here, it says it should really be Rav Shimon Lokish. So it's Rish Lokish, is saying, now listen, after all, he said loy, and therefore they're not valid aiding. Now the Marshal wonders in particular, the Marshal wonders that about both of these stories, really, what's the chiddush in the first one? So okay, we just explained according to the Bach and the Shach, but then what's really the chiddush in the second case over here involving the living and the dead? So one thing is, and the Mukha Yosef explains, it's one thing when you have people are in a bed, he should realize that, you know what, it's very likely to have Edim over there. After all, it's very common that people are lying in a bed and they're not necessarily asleep. But in a caver, you don't usually have people hide out in a caver, so therefore you might think that you might think that even if he was Moida, then maybe it's not a valid Haidah, because he had no reason to think that Edim were there, and therefore the point is, again, because he's saying Loi, because he's saying no, then therefore it's not valid Edus, but in other words, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, if he was Shoisik, if later on he didn't say anything in response to, are you willing that the living and the dead should be Edim, then it would be a valid Odissa, it would be a valid Haidah, and that's the point, even though with a caver there's less likely of a reason to him to think that there are actually Edim there. Okay. Another point. Omer Ravina. So Ravina says, Vitamer a Popper. Some say the Popper said, Shmamina, Meha, we can learn from all of these stories, Hoda Omer of Yehuda Omer Rav, Tzorach Shema Atam Edai, that when on Omer Aleph, Rabbi Yehuda had said, in the name of Rav, you have to say Atam Edai, Loi Shnok Yom Loivav, Loi Shnok Yom Malvav Shosik. It doesn't matter whether the Loiva says, you're my Edim, or whether the Malva says, these are the Edim, and the Shosik Loiva, and the Loiva is quiet, either way that would work. Because we see from these two stories, only because he said, no, I'm not willing to accept them as Edim, does it not work? But if he had been quiet in the case of the bed or in the case of the caver, it would have worked. Because time and omer loy v'lav, because doima loy v'loy, because we see only in these two cases, only because the loyver says no, then therefore it means that he's not accepting them as edim. Aval shosik, but if he had been quiet, hokinami, then indeed it would work and it would be valid edus. Now, that's talking about, the Ran points out, that's talking about when the Malva says, Monali biyodcha, and the Loiva says yes. But if, when to begin with, if he doesn't say anything, when the Malva says, Monali biyodcha, then it means he just didn't bother answering him, and therefore the fact that he was quiet doesn't say anything, doesn't mean anything at all. So that's the chiddush of these various dinim. Okay. Another example, the Gemara says, Ahu Dav Korale Kav Roshu. There was a certain person, people nicknamed him the Kav of Debts. Because they were saying about him, he owes so much money to people, it's like if you add together the weight of all the shtaris against him, it comes out to a weight of a kav. A kav is around 3 pounds or so. So you're saying, those people are saying, look at this guy, he owes a lot of money to different people. Omar, but one time he says, man masik bi, what do you think? You think I owe money to everybody? Who, after all, is the ones to whom I owe money, el ploini or ploini? All I owe is to ploini and ploini. Well, also Ratavu will come the dinner come to Rav Nachman. Well, that ploini and ploini went and took him to Beis Din. Look, he admitted that he owes us money. Omer Rav Nachman said not necessarily. Odom also shalolach bias atzmai. A person may well not want to make himself that he doesn't want to make it look like he's full of money. Because he's afraid of an ayin hara or whatever. So therefore, no, that's not a valid hayah unless there were edim present. Now, before we mention the point, mishata yisibacha, one difference is that before we were talking about where the malva came with a claim that says you owe me money, and he says sure, and we can say mishata yisibacha. Here, nobody's coming with a specific claim against him. There's rumors going around him, and he's saying that who do I owe money to? So that's the Nemuka Yosef and the Rosh, in fact, point out And Tosfos also makes a similar distinction between whether there's somebody teveya from him, is there somebody actually demanding? Then he can say that. Then he can say mishato yisibacha. But here, nobody's demanding anything. Nobody's claiming money from him in the first place. So he can say that I didn't want las bias at me. I didn't want to make myself look rich. And that's a valid claim. So again, unless there were edim. Another example, Hahuda have a curl like Achver the Shochiv Adinri. There was a person where they nicknamed him the mouse that sleeps on coins. So in other words, let's consider if a mouse has a pile of coins, what's it doing with it? By the way, that distinction that was saying according to Tosfos and the Rosh and Nemuka Yosef, the distinction between whether somebody else was Tadeya him or not, the Rambam gives a different distinction actually. The Rambam says the difference is, was the original in the presence of the person that he claims he owes money. So then he can't say it was just a shalolas bias atzmi. Then don't do it in a way. Don't be in front of the person who you're claiming is a malva. But in the case over here where he was saying all I owe is to Pliny and Pliny weren't actually present at the time, and therefore he has the stronger claim of I didn't want las bias atzmi rather than the weaker claim of mashata yisibachol, which is after all would require him to say that I was joking. Whereas here we can say that it's not even a matter of a joke, it's a matter of about a serious reason to not do it. Anyway, so now, Hahuda have a kodale akra the shoch of adinri. There was a person where they nicknamed him a mouse that sleeps on coins, meaning if you had a mouse has a pile of coins, what would it do with them? Nothing. So the same way, in other words, they were using this as a metaphor to mean this guy is a rich person, but he's cheap, and he doesn't want to have hana from his own money. So he's cheap on spending money on himself. Before he passed away, almost says Plonio Masco Bizuzi, that I owe money to Pliny and Pliny. Bosted the Shochiv, so after he passed away, also Tavino the Yoshin, that Pliny and Pliny came and took the Yoshin to base him. Look, your father admitted before he passed away that he owes us the money. Also, the Chamei de Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yosi, so the case came to Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yosi. Amalahu, he says, you know, Ki Amrin and Odom Ose Shalolas Bias Atzmai, you know, when we say that a person would say, I didn't want to make it look like I'm rich. Hani mili mechayim. That would be when he's alive, that he could say he doesn't want an ayin hara or whatever. Aval acham misaloi, but you can't say he's going to die anyway, so you can't say odom osir shaloi las bias atzmai. So therefore, yes, we're going to have to make the yoshin pay these two people because their father was moida. Poru palva. Well, in the event the yoshin paid off half of it. Well, the two people took the Yoshim to Beis Din to collect the other half as well. This time, also the Kamei de Rav Chiya. This time, the second Din Torah came to Rav Chiya. Omelahu, he says, it's not really so. Kishem Sha'odim Osu, Shor Las B.S. Atzmai, just as much as a person might not want to make it look like he himself is rich because of an Ayin Hara or whatever, Kach Odim Osu, Shor Las B.S. Bonob, you could say the same thing that he's doing on behalf of his children. He doesn't want to make it look like his children are rich, and therefore he might well have said that not as an actual admission, but rather just for that purpose.
What about the situation where a person passes away and you pass away with owing money is a terrible thing?
That's true. And if he had them write it down, and if he had had it write, as the Gemara is going to go on to say over here, where they make a kinyan on it, where they write it down, is different. But if he just says it, that I owe money to Pliny and to Pliny, then. Tosfos points out, now it is true, Eidon Meshata B'Shas Misa, a person is not going to joke around before he's going to die. But there, that's the thing. Tosfos makes the same distinction that we just said before about within this din of Odisha. There they actually said to him, you owe us money.
And he admits that, yes, so then you can say that Shulei Lasbia wouldn't apply in that case. Here we're talking about where he on his own said that I owe them, then we can say that, then we can say that he's saying Shulei Lasbia. So that's the distinction. But yeah, if he actually owed them the money and actually meant for it to be fulfilled, he would have told his Yoshim, be sure to pay Pliny and Pliny. Yeah. Okay. So sort of Shlia says that, yeah, when he said that he owes them money, it doesn't necessarily mean it's binding on his Yoshim. It may have just been Shulei Lasbia as Bonav. Omrulei, so they told him, Nazel in a header. Well, does that mean we have to pay back the half that they already paid us? Because after all, it turns out that there was no reason for them to pay us based on your new psakdin. You see the bittul that these people have that they're willing to say, you know what, we received this money and we had taken them to Beis Din in the first place, but we're willing to give it back if you say so. Omelahu Rav Chiya says no. Kvar Hora Zokin, the elder Rabbi Shmuel, already paskin that they owed you the money. And I don't want to argue against him. So whatever you have, you can still keep. Now, we are going to learn in the next paragraph when we say that a Din Torah is reversed and when not. So even if this was one of the cases where in principle it could be, Rav Chiya says, you know what, I don't want to argue against Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Yossi, he said that you were owed that money, so you can keep that, but you don't have to pay anything else.
We don't mix the shiva around where the guy says I'm dying and I owe them money. It's true.
That's what I'm saying. That's what Tosfos had drawn the distinction that where the Baalei Chayiv themselves come to him and say, you know, you owe us money, and he says, you're right, I do, or where he tells his Yoshim explicitly, give to Pliny and Pliny, then sure, we have to give it. But here we're talking about he on his own said, I owe money to Pliny and Pliny, and there we have the ability to say Shalai Lasbi as Bonav.
And we're not saying, we don't say that because he realizes that he's passing away and...
No, because that's what we're saying. Then he would either do it in front of the Baalei Din, or he would explicitly tell his Yoshim, make sure to pay this and this person. Or he would have a Kinyan made or whatever, something like that, yeah.
Okay.
All right. The Gemara continues. What happens? He makes a hodah in front of two Edim and then makes a Kinyan about it. Koisvid, then the Edim can even write a shtar saying that he owes the money, because Tosfos points out stam kinyan l'ksiva omer, when they make a kinyan by default we understand that it means that they can that it means that it's meant to be written down. So therefore they can even write such a shtar even without him saying so. Vimlav in Kostvin, but if there was no Kinyan, then they can't write it, because he said the Hoidah in front of them, but that's not enough to turn it into, so even if he told them Atam Edai, and therefore that obligates him to pay, but still he'd prefer to keep it as a Milval Peh than a Milval Bishtar, so they don't have the right to write it down without his permission. What about Bifnei Shloish of Ekonomi Yadid? What happens if he makes this Hoidah in front of three people, but there was no Kinyan? Now, three people is enough to be a Beis Din all by themselves. A basin of three, after all, can declare things hefker. So does that mean that they would have the ability to turn it into a milva mishtar? So Rav Omer Kosvin, Rav Asi Omer Ein Kosvin. Rav says that you could write it. Rav Asi says you can't write it. So Rav would say you could write it, because then again, effectively they were based in, and therefore they have the ability, even Hefka based in Hefka. Rav Asi says that not, he didn't mean to make them a based in, he just meant to make them Edim, and Edim don't have the ability to write such a shtar. Have order. Now there was actually a case involving such a thing. V'chosh lo Rav, l'hod Rav Asi. Rav, even though he himself held that you could write it, he was choshish to what Rav Asi said, and in practice he said, don't actually write it. So the Gemara continues, Omer of Adab Abba, Ho Udissa, this kind of case of Udissa, when you have a Shtar Hoidah, so do we write the Shtar Hoidah? Zimnin Kasvinin, Vizimnin like Kasvinin. Actually, it's not going to be a blanket statement that we always write it, or we always don't write it, when there was three, and there was no Kinyan. Rav Adab Abba says it's really going to depend. Knifi v'yasvi, if the three people that he was moide in front of them were sitting together already as a Beis Din, and he comes in as moide in front of them, so he didn't invite them together for that purpose, so therefore, loy kasvinin, we can't write it, because he only means to make them Edim. After all, it happens that there were three sitting over there, but if there had been only two, he might well have been moide in front of them as well. He didn't actually tell them, I want you to be a Beis Din, which therefore you have the power to write such a shtar.
Kanfinu ihu, but Rav Abba Abba says if he himself gathered them together for the purpose, then kasvin, and then we can write it because the fact that he gathered together three people shows that he wanted to make a base thing for it. Rava Amafilu Kanfiu Inu Iu like Kasvin, and Rava says no. Even if he gathered them together, we still don't write Abda Amalehu Hevro Alai Dayoni unless he says I want you to be Dayonim for me. Otherwise, it means that he just wants them to be aiding. Mavra Rav Ashi Omer and Mavra Rav Ashi says no. Afilu Omer Hevro Alai Dayoni like Kasvin, and no. Even if he says be the Dayonim, they still don't have the right to write it. Abda Kavi Duchta. Until they set up a specific place where they're going to sit together as Dayanim do. Dayanim don't just sit in any old place. They decide in advance, here's where we're going to be sitting as a based in Shtibel. So, and the Rambam, in fact, learns, if they're sitting in the Mokam HaKavua, then it means that there wouldn't be need for him to gather them together. It would be enough. They're sitting in the basin, Shtibel, and he came there. He obviously meant to take them as, Dayanim. But we're saying, if they're not sitting in the basin, Shtibel, then Ma'ab Rav Ashi is saying they have to actually decide on a particular place we are going to sit, which is what Dayanim do. The Shalchim, Zamni, Leila Beidina, and they come, and they go and send a message, officially summoning him to that basin, and then he admits. Then it's clear that he's doing it in front of Dayanim, who have the power to write a shtar, and then therefore we can write that shtar and turn it into a milvav shtar, because then also you have, then there's a pirsum teyit. The whole point of a milvav shtar is to collect from the chosim mishabodim, and that it's well known so that anybody else knows that in the future if they buy from him, then it may be taken away from them, etc. So we need all of that. In order, says Ma'abar Rav Ashi, in order for it, what was before, milvah alpeh, in order for it to be turned into a milvah b'shtar, you would need all of that. You would need that he actually, that the beis din is actually sitting as an official beis din, and that they summoned him, etc. Tosfos discusses, is the halacha like Ma'abar Rav Ashi, or is it not? Tosfos brings that Rashi and Rabbeinu Gershom say the halacha is like Ma'abar Rav Ashi in two cases, one of them being Udisa, one of them being this case. On the other hand, he brings from Seder Tanoim Mamiroim, a sefer from the time of the Goinim, that says the other way around. The halacha is usually like Ma'abar Rav Ashi, except for two cases, this being one of them. So in the end, So is the halacha like Ma'abar Rav Ashi or not? That's a machlokas rishayim. Okay, so we'll continue with these dinim of Odisha tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem.